Welcome to today's episode of Back Talk, brought to you by Successful Black Parenting Magazine. Now, I'm your host, Janice Robinson Celeste. Have you noticed the pressure for Black women to be superwomen, work, take care of the house, the kids, and save the world? Well, today, as part of our recognition of Mental Health Awareness Month, we're delving into the critical topic of the mental health crisis affecting Black women in America.
This is Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the most listened to podcast for parents by parents.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine, your go-to podcast talk show for parents. Now, I need a little favor from all of you fabulous listeners out there. Go ahead and spread the word about our show. Tell your friends, shout it out to your followers, because sharing is truly caring. And don't forget to use our hashtag BackTalk when you post. But here's an extra special twist. You can comment live during the show for a chance to have your comments or questions featured on air. Let's make this a lively, interactive experience. Now get those comments rolling in and let's dive into the conversation today. So let's talk about this. Black American women are disproportionately burdened with the superwoman schema, a mental health syndrome that leads many to suppress their emotions, convey constant strength, and avoid seeking help, often leading to mental health distress. In fact, African Americans specifically are 20% more likely to experience serious psychological distress than white Americans. Yet, Black women are about half as likely to seek mental health care. Now, today, we're honored to have an expert guest with us. Her name is Lee Higginbotham Butler. Lee is a three-time startup founder, two-time nonprofit founder, and the mother of three young boys. She is the visionary behind Akina. Now, that's a community-created platform to support Black mothers born out of her own search for a supportive network in the summer of 2020. Join us as we explore the challenges, the stigmas, solutions surrounding the mental health of Black women, and learn how we can contribute to a more supportive and understanding community. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you. Thank you, Janice. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, can you explain what the Superwoman Schema is, the SWS, and how it uniquely affects Black women, particularly in their roles as mothers and professionals?
Right. So this idea that Black women have to sort of save the world all the time, we have to be strong. It is something that has been born out of slavery. Black women ran the household. Black women gave birth to the babies. Black women did pretty much everything. And, you know, we've always had to do these things and stay strong, stay quote unquote strong. That is sort of the Superwoman schema. You know, it's always been said, if you want somebody to do the job right, you need to hire a Black woman to do it. Oh. It just is what it is. We take care of business. But a lot of times, we should not have to carry the burden for everyone, right? You know, and it can affect us mentally, you know, when we're doing so much for everyone else that we're not pouring into ourselves. So the way my household runs, I've got three boys, two teenagers and a five-year-old. The way my household runs, my husband is very good at checking in. He is very good at saying, hey, are you good? Do you need a break? And if I do need a break, then he will take the kids and give me a little bit of alone time. He recognizes that I am my best self when I have a moment to decompress, when I have a moment for self-care, when I have a moment to just kind of do the things that I want to do. You know, not always having to do homework with the kids or play with the five-year-old or, you know, have conversations with my husband. Sometimes I just need a mental break. I just need to stop, take a step back. You know, running a company at the same time, you know, a lot of times that can take a lot of my time. And I don't always get a chance to even recognize it in myself. So I am blessed to have that kind of a partner who is good at checking in on me. It's unfortunate that that's how the world works, but Black women have always had to sort of shoulder the burden, be the moral compass for the country, it seems like.
Well, and we have saved the country, saved the world in our decisions and our voting last minute in different places. And I've seen it firsthand. But have you seen the interview with Kamala Harris and Drew Barrymore? And yes. What did she say to Kamala? We need you to be Mamala. And save the country. This is what we're talking about. Why did you put this burden on this Black woman that you have never put on anyone else before? Can you talk about that a little bit?
You know, I get where Drew was coming from. I don't think that she meant it in the way that she said it. I'm going to give her a little bit of grace here. But when I heard it, my trigger was, wait a minute, that's not her cross to bear. She doesn't need to save the country. I mean, the country needs to save itself at this point. And it just goes back to what I was saying. It's ingrained in us. And I don't even think that Drew recognized what she was saying when it came out of her mouth. But as a Black woman, it did kind of give me that little trigger there. Like, why would you say that to her? Why would you say, would you say that to First Lady Jill Biden? Probably not. Would you say that to literally anybody else? You probably would say it to Michelle. You probably would say it to Michelle Obama. But it's not incumbent upon us to save the world. It is not incumbent upon Kamala Harris to save the world. And I get that she has a lot of respect for Kamala. I would expect that. But that's not her cross to bear. And it's just unfortunate that that is sort of the go-to, you know, please save us. Please save us from ourselves.
It was cringeworthy at the least.
For sure.
I know she didn't mean any harm, but the fact that that is embedded in the people's minds like her, that we come at the last minute like the cavalry, puts a lot of pressure on us. And that's just a large scheme of things. Like, you know, we feel this at the job sometimes. We feel it, of course, in the home. You know, but as a mother of three young boys and being such a successful entrepreneur, how has the superwoman schema impacted your own mental health journey?
Right. If I'm being candid, I haven't always practiced the best mental health. I haven't always practiced the best self-care. I come from a long line of very strong women who have taken care of the family. My grandmother, my mother's side was PhD. She died very young when my mother was 5 years old. My mother, is an attorney, very successful attorney here in Texas. You know, she did everything she could, you know, to make sure that my sister and I were okay. But I don't recall seeing my mom really take care of herself until she was probably in her 40s. Was when she started, you know, getting into yoga and, you know, doing things that were just for her. You know, I feel like we really have this, it's just been ingrained in us to take care of everyone else first. And it wasn't until my husband started to notice changes in me. I wasn't always happy. I wasn't always, you know, I was quick to anger, you know, those kinds of things, just a little impatient. And it wasn't until he really started to notice that he was like, you know, Lee, do you need a minute? Like, it's okay if you need a minute. I can take the kids and I can go and do other things and with them. But I really started to pay attention. Okay, let me really take care of myself here. It's very easy for Black women to have anxiety, depression, and these things show up as anger. They show up as aggression. They show up as frustration. And that could be at home. That could be in the workplace. But what's really happening is we're screaming inside and we're not releasing it. We don't have an outlet. And there's so many triggers that happen, you know, in corporate America. I'm on this founder's journey. I can't tell you the amount of times that I've had to just clench my fists and just, okay, just, I can't believe this is happening again. But it's taking that moment to just decompress, woo-saw, you know, let me go. And self-care can look a lot of different ways. For me, self-care is just sitting in silence. Just let me sit here in silence. If I want to read, I'll read, but I just want just silence for a little while. Self-care for some might look like a massage. It might look like yoga. It might look like going to get your nails done. You know, it can look any way. Just remember the words self-care. You're taking care of yourself, and that is nobody's business but yours. How you do that is up to you, but it's so important to take a few minutes and do it.
Right. You can't pour from an empty vessel. You can't give if you don't give to yourself, right?
Right.
So I know for me, it looks like hiking, going to the gym, listening to classical piano music. Those are the things that, you know, make me feel good. And so that's what I'm going to do. And getting my nails done, by the way, that's always, and it don't, let's not even mention massages. That would be great. So you mentioned the sitting in silence and yoga. Is there anything else that you do that you particularly like that some other parents might be able to do who work full time or even have their own business? Because God, I don't know where you find the time.
So my happy place is my mom's house. My mom lives about 45 minutes away from me, and that's the home that I grew up in. And so that is my happy place. So if I need a minute, sometimes I'll just go and hang out at my mom's house, whether she's there or not. I'll just go hang out there. I know it sounds weird, but okay. For Mother's Day, that my husband was like, hey, you want to go hang out at your mom's house? Like, yeah, I kind of do. I kind of want to do that. So that's what I'm going to do on Mother's Day. I know there are two camps of moms. There's some moms who are, you know, it's Mother's Day and I just want to be around family and I want to be around my kids. And I literally am with my kids 24/7. So for me, it's like, okay, I need a break. So I'm going to go to my happy place and just sit in silence for a little while. My mom knows when I'm there. Sometimes I'm there to hang out with her and sometimes I'm there to just decompress for a little while.
There's nothing weird about that whatsoever. I got to tell you, my mom isn't far away and we're bringing her over here this time, but, you know, it's, you know, definitely I would be there. Let me talk about some statistics and we can get into that. I saw today that the Mental Health Technology Transfer Center Network posted that African Americans are 20% more likely to experience serious psychological distress than white Americans. That Black women, which we mentioned earlier, are about half as likely to seek mental health care. And this is affecting our children, too, because right. In 2019, it said that Black female high school students were 60% more likely to attempt suicide than non-Hispanic white females of the same age. That's more than half. Why is that? Is it the pressure that we're feeling? Are they feeling it, too?
I think it's both. I think it's generational, if I'm being honest with you. I think that, you know, so many things have happened to our people, our ancestors, that I do believe trickles down. It's passed on. It's not necessarily, it doesn't stop with this person, this individual. That trauma, I feel like it continues on down the line. And for Black women in particular, my dad used to have this saying, you are Black and a woman. You got two strikes. You can't afford to not be smart, okay? Because that would be your third strike. So I feel like there is a lot of pressure for Black women to navigate the world as a member of an underrepresented disrespected, marginalized community, but also to navigate the world as a woman, right? I feel like with femininity in particular, there is that cross section that we have to navigate that not everybody does. You know, I'm raising three Black boys. They're 15, 14, and 5 right now, but it's a lot. It's a lot to raise them It's a lot to take care of myself. It's a lot to run a business as a woman, but then also as a Black woman. I feel like we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to overachieve. I think our girls are putting a lot of pressure on themselves to overachieve. For the longest time, I thought I was going to be an attorney just because my mother was, not because I wanted to be one, but because that was what I saw and that was what I thought I had to do, and put that pressure on myself, even though that wasn't anything that I wanted to do. That was not my path in life. And I feel like these girls, they're feeling that pressure. I look at the girls that are friends with my sons. They are trying to gather the attention of these boys, but they're also trying to navigate being a girl, being a young girl, dealing with all of their hormones and all of their emotions and all of the things that they have to navigate. But then also, how do I compete with the other girls for this boy's attention? You know, there's that. There's you know, trying to achieve in school. There's, you know, trying to be pretty, you know, want to feel good about themselves outwardly, but also feeling good about themselves on the inside. Not to attract too much attention. Not that it's incumbent upon them. We should be able to dress however we want to dress. These girls should be able to dress how they want to dress. Should not have to be responsible for how men and boys are going to react to them. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. We're the ones that are looked at if something goes horribly wrong. You know, oh, well, you were wearing the wrong thing, or you were, you know, doing the wrong dance, or you were putting out those vibes. Well, no, I was existing in my skin. This right. person's reaction to that is their business. That is incumbent upon them to control, not me, to exist in my skin. And there's some sort of reaction to that.
Absolutely. Now, given that Black women are about half as likely to seek medical or mental health care, what barriers do you think are most significant that contribute to that, and how can we begin to dismantle those?
I think you know as well as I do, mental health was not something that was talked about until very, very recently. Getting help for a condition, maybe that's anxiety, maybe that's depression, maybe that's, you know, something else. That was just a hush-hush thing. That wasn't something, A, that you talked about, and it certainly wasn't something that you sought help for. I feel like recently, though, we have started to come to terms with it's okay if you need help. I recall an instance with my sister years and years and years ago, and I was just like, you know, I was in a dark place. This was in my single days. I was in a dark place, and I was just like, I feel like I need to talk to someone. And she's like, well, you should. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Hold on. Are you trying to say, you know, I need help? And she's like, Lee, sometimes it's just good to have an unbiased opinion. And when she said that, I was like, she's kind of right. Like, it's not, why did I have this stigma attached to getting help? You know, I needed an unbiased opinion. And so I feel like, you know, we're coming around as a community. We're talking about it more. We're having conversations like you and I are having now. We have platforms to amplify that message. And so I feel like the stigma is starting to come down. But, you know, I think that at some point we need to step outside of ourselves and think, okay, the way my sister said it, maybe I need an unbiased opinion. Maybe I just need somebody to talk to who doesn't have skin in the game. Maybe I need a different perspective. And a lot of times our friends and our family are not that person because they love you. They want to support you. They want the best for you. And their opinions, their perspective is not going to be unbiased all of the time. And so I see that it's starting to switch. We have a partnership at Akina with Black Female Therapists. And the founder of Black Female Therapists is Amber D. She's fantastic. She's a licensed therapist herself. And she has this this community of therapists that are available. And, you know, she does monthly sessions and all of that. You know, that's why it was so important for us to include that in our three main pillars at Akina, was that mental health piece, because it is so important. And we are just now starting to talk about it.
Right. Well, let's talk about some of the cultural stigmas like around mental health. Right. So just real talk, we know that, like you said, it's only a recent thing that we started seeking mental health because you were told, you know, you need to go talk to the preacher, right? Yep. That was one of them. And that was your counselor for everything and anything. And so we didn't go to psychiatrists and psychologists. And if you took medication, oh, you must be crazy, right?
Really crazy, yeah.
Crazy. Am I missing anything? Like, those are the ones that I remember.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. I mean, I've had my challenges, and it's that word crazy is a trigger word for me. Mm-hmm. Why would that be a word? You know, sometimes mm-hmm. you just need a little help, and that's okay. You should be able to say, I need some help. I'm going to go talk to somebody. Somebody, you know, I can't love my best friend to death, but I'm not going to go talk to her about everything because, again, not an unbiased opinion. Not an unbiased perspective, not a professional. So, you know, it's important that we really, if we need that help, that we seek that help, and we seek it from a professional, from somebody that can lead you down the right path, from somebody that can, you know, help you see things that maybe you wouldn't have seen yourself.
Yes, and talking about help, as we are recognizing Mental Health Awareness Month, what initiatives or resources would you recommend to our listeners to support their mental health or to support mental health in the Black community overall?
Absolutely. Well, first, I have to recommend Akina. We have a whole mental health section on our platform that we've just launched. It is full of articles on just about every aspect of mental health, self-care, and wellness that you would want to see. We will begin starting our monthly counseling sessions, small group sessions. If you want to take that to just a one-on-one session, you have the ability to do that at a preferred price with the therapist. And then I also would recommend, you know, blackfemaletherapist.com. There's also blackmaletherapist.com for the other side. Amber is the founder of both of those. There's a myriad of resources, and I can't list them off the top of my head one by one, but I will tell you, we have a list of those at Akina Connect.
And how do you get to Akina? What's the website?
Yes, it's akinaconnect.com.
Okay, that's easy. Akinaconnect.com. Now, you founded Akina after seeking a community for Black mothers and finding none. What challenges did you observe that led you to create the space in the beginning?
Yeah, so we moved from Birmingham to Dallas in 2017, December of 2017. My kids were very young. They were, what, 8 and 9, I think, at the time. And I, in that move, threw away all my baby stuff. I, you know, told my husband, oh, looks like it's not going to happen. It's been 10 years, not going to happen. And threw everything away. We hadn't been in Dallas for 4 months before I found out I was pregnant. And I was 40. My best friend was pregnant. My sister was pregnant, like all at the same time. We all, you know, were having these babies. And, you know, again, I've moved from Birmingham. I'm from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but I hadn't lived here in 15 years. I didn't know the hospitals to go to. I didn't know the doctors. My father was a physician, and he had passed. He was the person that I would have leaned on for that information. And I was just really trying to find a community here that I could connect with. And there were several that, that were online that I, you know, were for quote unquote every mom. But what I very quickly found out was on these platforms, the Black women are searching for each other. And I was certainly searching for other Black women. So I, you know, told my husband, of course, we're serial founders. So I told my husband, hey, there's a void in the marketplace here. There needs to be a place where Black women can come together, connect, have these conversations without having to give context, celebrate each other. And so this was in 2018. I sat on this idea for several years. It wasn't until the summer of 2020 with the murder of George Floyd that I took action. We were dealing with a lot, I think, as a country. I was dealing with a lot individually. Hearing him call for his mom was just more than what I could handle at the time. So even now, it still kind of pulls me. You know, I've got, again, three Black boys that I'm raising. It's terrifying, the thought of them leaving the house and, you know, something happens to them and I'm not there and they're calling for me. That is terrifying. And so I'm having these conversations with my friends. And that was when I was like, you know, I've been sitting on this. I'm a believer. So let me just preface this with that. But I've been sitting on this. I've been running from God and it is still on my heart. And so I really feel like this is something that I've got to do. And so my husband said, all right, let's do it. So we actually launched our first app in 2021. And we very quickly realized that a lot of the conversations we were having were really around Black womanhood. And so we decided, let's kind of see this as a beta testing ground. Let's see, you know, what we can learn from this. And we took that app down in 2022, in July of 2022. And we've spent the last 18 months in a pivot. We have retooled, reconfigured our app and our app experience. And we have pivoted as a company to embrace Black womanhood. So it's not, at this point, we're not just for Black moms. We're not just for Black women, to be honest with you. We recognize that that is our target demographic, but the information that is there, the information that we're talking about, the classes that we're having, the events that we're having are centered around womanhood. And we are a very inclusive community. As long as you understand the assignment when you come in, you know, then we're good. We had 4,000 women on our previous app. Tell me where you can get 4,000 women together and there not be any cattiness, no bullying, none of that. We had none of that going on. It was a very, very positive and uplifting space. Even when we disagreed nicely. And I can't explain it, but I really feel like that's the culture that we've established as a company. And so that is the experience that we are hoping for when we relaunch our app this summer.
I have to ask, like, what was your background before this? What was your husband's background, especially for him to say, okay, let's do it? Did he have experience with apps, or you guys just said, let's just figure it out?
You know, so my husband and I'm going to use this word, and it just is what we say in our household. My husband and I are nerds. We love to learn. We love to research. We love to figure things out. And once we're in something, we're 100% in it. So to answer your question, do we have experience with apps? Not exactly. My husband was in the middle of launching a digital platform that was in the healthcare, skincare space. But we didn't necessarily have a background in that. My background is in government affairs and public relations. My husband's background is in banking. So that's not really the background that you would you would think. But at the end of the day, we're two smart people. We figured, okay, we've got some resources here. Let's find people that we can talk to who can help us on this journey. And that's what we did. We found our CTO, Jarvis. He's based in Atlanta. He kind of has walked us through this app experience. We've found a myriad of experts in a myriad of fields to sort of speak to everything that we're doing on Akena with the maternal health, with mental health, with entrepreneurship and career development. We've sort of brought all of these people together with the idea of handing them the microphone and letting them, you know, speak to the audience. So yeah, the background wasn't necessarily there as much as the passion was, and as much as the drive was, and as much as this feeling that we had to do something to help, to uplift.
Let's talk about that, because you mentioned George Floyd, and that was your catalyst, right? Why is it that Black women and Black men carry that kind of stress daily on our shoulders? And I think that's what people outside of our community, they don't understand.
Yeah,
is that when an incident like that happens, we pile on another stress block, right? Just imagine as blocks. And then another one when the next incident, and the next one, and next one. We don't release that. We can't. It's in our cellular processes now. We can't, you know, it's in the annals of our brain most days, but it's there. And as soon as another incident happens, it just piles up. And that's a mental health problem there, because we can't, it's in our DNA almost. Like, it's, we can't release it, but we have to deal with it. So why is it that we carry this type of stress every time an incident like a George Floyd happens to us?
So we all knew that these incidents happen, right? We know as a community that we've never felt safe with police. We know everybody has heard of something that has happened, right? I go back to Rodney King. The reason that that Rodney King incident happened the way, everything that happened afterwards, the aftermath of that, it was the first time we had seen it on TV, right? It was the first time it was sort of in everybody's face. We have been talking about it. We know that it happens, particularly our community knows that it happens, but now here it is for the world to see. When George Floyd happened, we watched this man be brutally murdered on television, exactly the way that we know that it happens, but now we're confronted with it. I have never seen anything like that before, although I know that it happens, right? But now it's playing out on my television screen. Now my kids are watching this. Now I'm feeling it. It's in me. It is, you mentioned the stress blocks. It's weighing on me, right? And I think that it weighed on a lot of people. I think that it weighed on a lot of communities. We saw, you know, protests and demonstrations around the world. But particularly for our community, watching it play out on television, watching some of the cultural aspects of it, you know, when you culturally, it's been said, you know, when you're going, you start calling for family members that have passed before you. Him calling for, we all knew what that was. We knew that he was in the throes of leaving. And that was traumatic to watch, particularly for our community. I don't know, I can't speak to anybody else's thoughts or feelings on it. I only know my perspective as me. But then I look at my kids, I look at my husband. You know, if we want to be really honest, I recognize, you know, I'm a light-skinned Black woman. I recognize that my skin color gives me some privilege that my husband doesn't have, my youngest son doesn't have. My two older kids are a little bit more on my complexion, but recognizing that privilege and then seeing something like that happen and having to look at your family and be this sort of protector, there we are, we're back at square one, right? We're back at Superwoman. We're back at protector. We're back at strong. when what we really need to do is take a minute to process our feelings and be vulnerable for a second. Feel the feelings, feel it.
Absolutely. I felt that with everything from Trayvon and all of the other young Black boys that were killed. Every time something happens that you know that wasn't just a fair, but it was tried to be made out as being fair somehow, and we knew it wasn't. Every time it happens again, it just affects me. I think it's also, like you said, you see it in your son, you see it in your husband, because we can relate to it and we know that they are us, right? They are us. And I can tell you a story. Like when I, right after George Floyd and all this stuff seemed to be accumulating at the same time, like everyone was, you know, every time you turn around, it was something on television. Nothing was being done about it. The police were at that time, you know, being released. They didn't do anything wrong. You know, I drive like a little old lady, okay? Mm-hmm. I do not drive fast. Do not expect me to make it to somewhere where you can get there in 6 hours. It's going to take me probably 8, 9, okay? So I had a cop follow me off the ramp from the highway. And I remember thinking, my God, what if I get the wrong police officer, right? Yeah. What if he's the wrong one, right? I know I'm light-skinned, you know? I got a nice tan right now. I'm light-skinned. But I still know that that doesn't protect me. I could be in a suit. A man can be in a suit. It doesn't matter. You can be in your military, gear. It does not matter. It doesn't matter. So I was terrified. I did nothing wrong, and I started crying. And people would say, "Oh, you must have did something wrong. You're crying." No, I was terrified because I didn't know what I was going to get. And luckily, I guess he got another call and he pulled off real fast. But he was on my bumper, and I didn't know what to do. I have had a Jeep at the time, so that's a flat back. So it's not much separate you besides the tire. And he was so close, I couldn't see his headlights. So we're traumatized in addition to being able to relate and empathize with what these men and women have gone through. You know, we don't even know if we're going to be sitting up watching TV one day and our door's going to get broken down because they have the wrong place, you know? Think that this is where you're supposed to be, and we're just sitting there with nothing in our hands or sleeping, and we will get killed. So do we feel safe? You know, it's a feeling of we want to feel safe, but you always have this in the back of your mind. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure you can relate to that.
I often wonder what it's like to feel safe. Like, what does that really feel like? Have I ever really felt safe? You know what I mean?
It's freedom.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I went to the first time I flew into Vancouver, Canada, and my mother was with me, and she noticed it too. You know, first of all, there was a difference between kind of disgruntled employees and happy employees. You know, Canada has the stereotype of being, you know, very pleasant. Well, yeah. We experienced that. You know, when we got to the Canadian side, it smiles and pleasantry. And then we noticed as we walked around and did things that it's not quite the same. Now, I'm not saying they don't have racism there, but we didn't feel all eyes were on us, okay?
Right.
We didn't feel like we were a target. And that was freedom. For the first time, we really felt free. And we talked about this. We were like, wow, you know, I never felt this before. And even to the point where, you know, even me being, we all have our little stereotypes in the back of our head. I had this big biker guy come up to me in the park in Kitsilano in Vancouver. And I was like, why is he coming up to me? This bald biker, tough looking dude. And he just wanted to pet my dog. I had a little Maltese. And he was like, oh, you're, and I was like, oh, that was so wrong of me to prejudge this man. And this is what I am accusing other people doing with me. But I've been so traumatized and I'm guarded, you know? So, and I was like, God, forgive me, because I don't want that to happen to me. And for the first time, I'm feeling this freedom. So it felt like freedom. I can tell you that. Yeah. And I can say that every time I went there, because I had the opposite happen with my daughter's neighbor, who wanted to know when we were leaving. So, and it was truly ingrained, and we were the only ones of that skin color on that block. So, but anyway. Mm-hmm. But it does, it feels free. Let me ask you now, since you talked about your boys a bit in today's world, what advice would you give to Black mothers raising young boys, especially regarding open discussions about mental health?
I don't know that it's advice so much as it's sort of what I do. I will always shy away from giving advice because I feel like we all, you know, we have to do what works for us. We have to do what works for our families. And only you can know that. And that's a very personal decision. But we have regular discussions. We have regular check-ins with the kids. How are you? What's going on at school? Are you feeling this way? Do you need a day? I do not mind my kids taking a mental health day. Sometimes they need a break, and I get it. Sometimes I need a break. But we don't stigmatize needing a break. We don't stigmatize, you know, self-care. We don't stigmatize talking about our feelings and our emotions. If particularly upset about, well, let's talk about why this is your reaction. Let's talk about why you're now stomping around the house. Like, what's going on? And I know how to talk to my kids to get it out. So the way I do it might be different from the way someone else does it. My kids are, they're pretty open about how they're feeling. They're definitely going to let me know if they're upset. They're definitely going to let me know real quick if they're upset with me in particular, but such is life. But yeah, we have regular open dialogue. I talk to them about how I'm feeling. You know, mom's tired. Mom, you know, I've been doing this, and this, and I'm feeling overwhelmed and frustrated. If I need to apologize to my kids, I will apologize to my kids. I'm not above apologizing, especially when I've treated them unfairly, right? Especially when I might be upset about something entirely different, but now I've lashed out. You know, I will apologize. I'll apologize for any type of, hey, I didn't mean to make you feel that way. I apologize. That was not my intent. My intent was this, but it came out wrong, and forgive me, you know? And I feel like that really builds up trust with my kids, and it also allows them to feel their feelings, especially as men that are sort of taught not to feel their feelings. I want my boys to let me know how they're feeling. Don't be afraid to communicate when you're sad, when you're angry, when you're feeling overwhelmed and frustrated. These are important discussions. These are important conversations. And, you know, whomever they choose as a life partner, if they choose a life partner, I would want them to be open with that person. I would want them to express themselves and feel safe with that person enough to express themselves the way that they express themselves to me and their dad.
I think open communication is so important, especially with teens. And the fact that you have that is absolutely wonderful. And they feel comfortable coming to you and speaking with both of you. That's amazing. And if other parents can have that, I think we'd be a step ahead a bit. So let's talk about the future. Looking ahead, like, what are your hopes for the future of mental health support for Black women?
I hope that we get to a place where it is readily available. I hope that we not just get to a place where it's available, but we as a community get to a place where we seek it and it's available. I hope that we get to a place where it's not stigmatized, where it's available and it's not super expensive. You don't have to have insurance to afford it. You know, that's what I hope.
Is there a way that you think our listeners can contribute to this vision so that we can help bring more resources to the Black community for mental health?
Conversations like this one, not just during Mental Health Awareness Month, but all of the months, all of the days, all of the weeks. Just having these conversations, you know, checking in on each other, checking in on your quote unquote strong friend, you know, and not making it like, hey, you all right, but more, let's have a conversation. Like, are you good? And if you're not, you can talk to me, or, hey, let me send you a couple of therapists that you can check out. Learning how to find a therapist, learning how to seek help, I think is also important. But I think it all starts, again, I believe that everything in the world starts with conversations. It starts with education and being open to new ideas, really listening and being open.
Okay. Well, we're at the end of the show. Is there anything else that you personally want to talk about that we haven't touched today, or any advice that you have for the parents who are listening?
I think it's really spend some time getting to know yourself and spend some time getting to know your kids. Not all your kids are going to be the same. I've got three different personalities in this house, and how I talk to one is not how I talk to the other. But really getting to know them on a granular level, really understanding who they are and what works best. Across the board, punishments may not work best. Punishment in general may not work. I don't know. It's you know, how you run your household is how you run your household. But I think really spending time getting to learn your family and getting to learn your children, your partner, having these open dialogues, having discussions, checking in with each other, recognizing when something's off. If you're really having these conversations and you really are starting to understand how your kids function individually, you will understand when something is off. It'll just hit you immediately and you can address it quickly. I think that's probably what I would say. Yeah.
Okay. And before we go, let people know once again how to get with Akina. Give them the website and any of the other information that you think is pertinent.
Absolutely. Let me just say a little bit about Akina quickly. Akina is really on a mission to revolutionize the way that Black women are connected and resourced. And we do that by creating an intersection at technology and community. We have spaces for entrepreneurship, career development, mental health, maternal health, healthcare, wellness. There are events, webinars, seminars, online and off. We have social and professional meetups. We're working on a myriad of things. We are working on a culturally competent AI tool. So that's coming soon as well. But you can reach Akina at akinaconnect.com. We're Akina Connect on all of our socials. We look forward to seeing you.
Well, we love that. And thank you for being such a resource for our community. And thank you, Lee, for joining us today. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Okay. Now, and a big shout out to all of you tuning in and engaging with us here at Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the syndicated podcast that is a must for parents. Make sure you follow us on Facebook at Black Parenting One, that's number one. On Instagram, we're Successful Black Parenting. Don't forget to swing by our website, which is successfulblackparenting.com, where you can find loads of excellent resources to help you excel in your parenting journey. And it helps us too to stick around. The more engagement we have, the more involvement we have, the more you like things, the more you participate in all of our processes that we do, the more that we can do for you. We'll be back actually later on today with another live podcast where we'll be talking about debunking these myths. There's a whole report that came out to debunk myths about Black parents in education. You know how they say, oh, Black parents, they don't get involved in schools. And I've been a teacher and I know I've heard that. Well, there's a whole report by the United Negro College Fund that shows that Black parents are involved in schools. We're going to talk about that more. But until next time, I wish you the best and much success. Take care. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine. We'll see you soon.